a year and a half ago, visiting with this church was Mr. Norman Smith. And at that time, I hadn't entered Ambassador College yet, and I didn't dream that I would be back here again in so short a time to speak to you people from this point of view. The thing that I would like to talk about today is prayer. What results do you expect from prayer? And when you pray, do you really expect something to happen when you get down on your knees? Do you really expect something is going to come of it? Or are you even convinced that you should pray? Well, after the Feast of Tabernacles, which I think the most of us attended, and hearing Mr. Raymond McNair's sermon, we should realize that we should pray and the value of it. Now, the ministers all tell us today that we ought to pray and pray more, that we would have more faith and more of the things that we need if we did pray more. Now, the ministers aren't the only ones that have said this. In Luke, the 18th chapter, and in the first verse, "And he spoke a parable unto this end, that men ought to always pray and not to faint." Now, the Diaglot has this a little better. It says, "And he spoke a parable unto them, unto this end, to show that they ought to pray continually, and not to be weary." Not to grow weary in your prayers, but keep at it, in season and out of season, as the Apostle Paul said. Now, this parable here is about an unrighteous judge, which brings to my mind a particular situation that we've had in the Pasadena church, which I suppose that most of you have heard about. In the second verse, Christ is saying, "There was in a city a judge which feared not God, and neither regarded man." Evidently, this judge had a rather high position because he wasn't afraid of God. Of course, he was ignorant there because he wasn't afraid of God. He should have feared God. But neither did he regard any man. That means he had authority. He wasn't afraid of any of the men in the city. There was a widow in that city, and she came unto him saying, "Avenge me of mine adversary." And he would not for a while. He didn't do it right away. But afterward he said within himself, "Though I fear not God, nor regard man, yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she weary me." It means she just keeps coming back to him and asking him for this thing. Now, this case that comes to my mind is a woman that had to separate from her husband when she came into the church because of a divorce and remarriage problem. And her husband wanted the children. Well, in the first place, he wanted to throw her in an insane asylum because of her religion. She was taken and thrown in jail, and while in jail, or in a prison cell, he took her children away from her and kept them from her. And when she was finally released, this judge finally released her, not because of her religion or anything, but because of a technicality. She was released from this trial. Then, when she got out, her husband had taken her children off someplace where she didn't know where they were or anything about them. And after going to court, or going to see the judge about it, while she learned his presence, and the judge had to come up in court as to whether who would have the children, her or her husband. And the judge finally, just yesterday, through this, told her that she would take the children, and that he didn't want to hear any more about religion in this case. Just forget religion; that was all out. He was just like this judge. He did not regard God in any way. He wouldn't have any religion in his court at all in that case. But rather, he judged it on the merits of the civil law. Now, in the sixth verse, Christ goes ahead and says, "Hear what the unjust judge says." Did you hear what he said? "Because of this continual coming, he did answer this woman." And God is not an unjust, as we'll see here in the next verse. "And shall not God avenge his own elect, which cry?" Now, this word "cry," when searched into the original Greek, is B-O-A-O, boaho, which means to shout for help or in a tumultuous, noisy way. That means to really have your heart into your prayers. In other words, to really cry out to him night and day, though he bear long with us, with them, showing that he will bear long with you. He will not answer you immediately. Now then, we all seem to have a problem of finding a place to pray in our homes. And I can appreciate this problem, as Mr. Armstrong told you. I have a wife and two children of my own. The way that I've solved this problem is to rise up early in the morning before anyone else gets up and go as far as I can from the bedrooms and use the opportunity then, and also the last thing at night. Now, while how to pray, as far as how to pray when you find this private place. Many of us seem to, well, I wouldn't say many of us, I don't know how many of us here, but I know when I first started, I would usually get in a very comfortable position and sometimes fold my arms and put my head over on my arms, and if you do that, you're going to occasionally find yourself sound asleep before you finish your praying. And of course we know that God's not going to hear such a prayer as that. But as the Apostle Paul said in 1 Timothy 2:8, I will therefore that men everywhere, lifting up holy hands, men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. He meant to lift up your hands toward heaven and cry out to God with your whole heart in your prayers. Now God isn't impressed by you making a bunch of gestures or by you making a show of emotion. But I would like to know any of you that have something that you really want to get over to someone that you're in earnest about and you really, really want to show them that can keep out the gestures. They just come out whenever you really want to express yourself. The same thing is with God. If you rend your heart in your prayers, you will naturally, gestures are going to come forth. And it's kind of hard to go to sleep if your hands are up in the air. At least you can put your heart more heartily into your prayer. Now then, Mr. Meredith suggested in our one of our Bible classes that we ought to pray an hour and a half a day. I know Mr. Raymond McNair said a half an hour. We ought to set that as a goal so we could really accomplish it. But Mr. Meredith said an hour and a half we ought to be praying. And he brought out the fact that if we did pray that long, that we were going to be tired. If you're really putting your heart in your prayers that long, an hour and a half a day, you're going to be weary. It's going to wear you out at first, at least. Well, now I tried this myself. I took that suggestion. I thought, well, I'll try this. And I prayed an hour and a half a day for 7 days straight. I had to miss a few meals, breakfast and lunch, but I got in that time nevertheless. But then that week, you know what the results were of that praying for that long? All that was visible was I was tired. That's all that I could see. It was the result of it. I was just worn out from it. It was really a pressing thing. Well, I didn't stop nevertheless from that, but went on and prayed the rest of this month. I cut it down an hour a day so that I could go ahead with my studies. I wouldn't be too cross with my family. And at the end of that month, then the things really began to happen. Results of that praying. The ministers came to me and told me that I was going to have the opportunity to begin to speak and in this capacity. And not only that, there are a couple of men here I think could verify that there are some results to much praying. That's Mr. Jackson and Mr. Fram, who have recently been ordained into God's service, into His work. And I think these men will verify the fact that though God bear long with us, He does hear us, and He does give us an answer. Now then, as far as us having our prayers answered, and we get down on our knees and pray daily, and we're to pray daily for God's work, ask the help for it. When we get up from the prayer, we don't see any results. We don't know what has happened as a result of that prayer. But I'd like to read a letter here, which will let you know that your prayers have been answered. This is from a lady in Colorado. I happen to work in the mailroom, the reason I came across this letter and happened to see it. Enclosed is our tithes and offerings. I was so happy this morning, this very morning, it's dated December the 30th, when my husband, an unbeliever, her husband was an unbeliever. He didn't have any religion, and especially not in the truth. Told me to send in $350 to the church. Now that, brethren, is an answer to our prayers, that $350. When you get off of your knees of a morning in prayer, you think of this. You just feel in faith and confidence that God someplace has moved on the heart and the mind of someone to send in this money that they wouldn't ordinarily do. It's just an answer of our prayers. That's what this $350 into God's work amounts to. Is that your prayers, your individual prayers. When you get up in the morning, you can have the faith, or after you've prayed, whether it's in the morning or the evening. You should have that confidence, that feeling of faith, that God has moved on someone's heart in this nation who wouldn't ordinarily have given his money to this work. Now there's one specific case, one fellow I'd like to mention that writes in continually to the work, and he's against it. He's against everything Mr. Armstrong says, and he even uses some curse words in his letter. That's how far he's away from religion. Yet that man sends money into the work, sends at least $20 each time. And one time he had a rather obtrusive letter that we sent his money back to him, you know, showing that we didn't want that kind of money. So it came right back in the airmail letter and said, keep this money. He says, it's not mine. He says, I'm giving it to you. But in that very same letter, he berated Mr. Armstrong in every way he could think of for what he preached. Now, why did that man give his money to that work? Can you answer that question? Well, I can. God moved on that man's heart and caused him to do it because of your prayers. Because you pray night and morning that God will stir the hearts and the minds of people that are able to give their money, and he does it. That is an answer. This man doesn't want to, yet he does it. He just has to. And that's the way that God is financing his work these days. And in James 5, the 16th verse, the very last part of it, this is the thing that we ought to rest our assurance on. That Jesus Christ inspired James here to write, the effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And when you can know that your prayers are availing much, and I've given you a couple of little instances today that will help you have more assurance that your prayers are availing much. You can rest assured now, when you've really accomplished something in your prayer, when you've really put your heart into it, that God has answered that prayer and that he will answer it.
This message is